Hello and welcome
to the Local Economic Development Podcast,
hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Stammer.
For other programs in this series,
please have a look at www.ledcast.net.
Good morning, Vietnam, and good morning, Jonathan Mitchell. We are here in Da Nang City in central Vietnam, sitting in a beach restaurant. It's quite beautiful, and the waves are rolling onto the shore. And we're intending to have to produce a little podcast this morning. So I'm sitting here with Jonathan Mitchell. And Jonathan, do you please want to introduce yourself?
Thank you. My name's Jonathan Mitchell, and I work at the Overseas Development Institute in London, which is a development policy think tank. Sitting opposite me is a man in a very interesting stripy shirt called Christian. Christian, could you introduce yourself?
So my name is Christian Schön. I'm working with Mesopartner, a small German consulting company specialized in local economic development. And we are currently in Vietnam because we worked jointly on a tourism promotion activity and value chain analysis in central Vietnam, here in Da Nang, where the private sector support program of the European Union is working. And in the context of this program, we contracted Jonathan Mitchell. Myself, I'm working in this program as a non-permanent EU advisor, like 5 months per year, and one of our focal sectors is tourism. And exactly this is the topic of today's podcast. We want to talk about tourism and the tourism development in Vietnam today, and also an outlook for tomorrow will be the focus of this discussion. So Jonathan, let us now look at Vietnam. We are in Vietnam, we have worked in this program here together, and we want also to continue our discussion looking at Da Nang, the city here in central Vietnam in particular, and tourism in the whole nation Vietnam in general. So let's look at our activity here in Da Nang. So what is Da Nang? Da Nang is one of the three secondary centers in Vietnam. So we have Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City, which are the major cities, and we have three secondary centers, which are Haiphong, Da Nang, and Can Tho, always in the north, center, and south of the country. Da Nang is famous because it was the headquarters of the U.S. troops when they were actively fighting in Vietnam. It is located directly in the center of the country, about 900 kilometers to Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City each. It has a population of about 800,000 people and one of the lowest poverty rates in the country, about 3%. Just one remark in terms of pro-poor policies. Vietnam has managed within the last 15 to 20 years to reduce the poverty rate from more than 70% down to a little bit below 20% average of the country. And so you can better assess the low rate of Da Nang, having only 3% poverty rate. We in this EU private sector support program did a study on the economic potentials of Da Nang just 1 year ago, and the result of the study was that there are a couple of sectors which are supposed to have economic potential for future development, and one of these, or probably the sector with the highest potential according to all the respondents we have involved in this study and also based on the statistical figures, is tourism. So we decided last year to go for a tourism analysis of the tourism sector, where we again selected the value chain approach to do so, and we contracted Jonathan Mitchell and also a local consulting company, MCG from Hanoi, and a team of different actors from key institutions working in tourism in Da Nang, like the Department of Tourism and also the Tourism Association, to work on that. So we have a couple of very interesting results, and Jonathan, maybe first you give a very short overview about the methodology we used here and how you assess this methodology against your previous experience, and then secondly, what are the major surprises of our study?
I think the first thing to say about methodology is that it's very different from what we've done before. The similarity is that we've tried to make best use of secondary data available that we can. And in Vietnam, this has been very easy because the secondary data is very, very good. I mean, for instance, all the hotels in the city provide detailed financial information to government every month. This is private sector as well as state-run hotels. So it's extraordinarily good secondary data. We have supplemented that with some really quite detailed primary data. So we've talked to pretty much everything that does move in Da Nang over the last two-week missions, talked to a lot of micro-entrepreneurs and tourists themselves. So good primary and secondary analysis. I think the thing that was really different, though, in Da Nang from what we've done before was the participatory element. And as Christian was saying, that involved a team of very active local stakeholders who were trained in the PUCA methodology and then implemented the research and have taken it forward into the implementation. And this is something that I've not been involved with before, ODI's not been involved with before, and is very different and I think is very innovative. Between the time of our first and second mission, we did an extremely extensive literature review of tourism value chains for the World Bank, and we looked through about 400 pieces of literature and we didn't find any evidence of a participatory tourism value chain ever having been done. So in this sense, we think it's truly innovative and unique, in fact. In terms of the findings and the surprises, I think the couple of key findings were first that the tourism value chain is bigger in Da Nang than we had expected based on the official statistics. The reason for this is that tourism tends to be seen in the accounts as purely hotels and restaurants, and we look at expenditure in those two sectors. When we looked at Da Nang, clearly there's a very high level, and in fact just about the same amount of expenditure taking place in other sectors like transportation, like excursions and retail expenditure by tourists. So I suppose the main headline is that tourism value chain is about twice the size that we thought it was from the official statistics. Second one is notwithstanding the fact that the value chain's bigger than we thought it was, the official statistics suggest, is that destinations really have to work very hard to achieve their competitive advantage. And there's clear evidence that the tourism value chain in Da Nang could be much bigger. The reason that this potential is not being achieved is really reflected in the very short length of stay of tourists in Da Nang. It's just over a day, about a day and a half on average for both the international and domestic sector, and also the failure to develop the main asset of the city, which is the beach that we're sitting on now. And the final main finding that we had was that the linkages between the tourism sector and the local economy could be strengthened, particularly in the food and the craft sector.
Thanks for this overview. I have a couple of questions. First of all, regarding the methodology. So you have mentioned different methodological elements that have been used and combined for this study. First of all, you mentioned PUCA. We should explain to our listeners what is PUCA. PUCA stands for Participatory Appraisal of Competitive Advantage, and it is a methodology to rapidly analyze a local economy or a value chain and to come up with proposals for quick wins, and all this in a very short time, usually 10 days to 2 weeks, the analysis before the implementation starts. PUCA has been used at this point in around 25 countries all around the world, and for local economies as well as for value chains. We were analyzing a value chain engaged in tourism in a service. Can you give some comment on how easy or how difficult, or let's say how appropriate you find it to use a value chain perspective for a service sector?
It's certainly different applying value chains for a service sector compared with a normal commodity. But I think that the complication in applying the methodology really just reveals the fact that it's a composite product. And as a composite service, tourism does involve a vast range of stakeholders, local support institutions, and supply chains. And one of the real values, I think, of the approach is that it keeps reminding you to look broadly and to look at the linkages between tourism and other bits of the economy in order to trace the impact of tourism throughout the local economy. So it's certainly more difficult than simply growing coffee, processing it, and then exporting it. But I think it's a very rewarding approach to looking at the tourism sector.
Right. So interestingly, I think one of the major differences between a product value chain and a service value chain, or in this case, tourism value chain, is in a context of a product value chain, the product in its phase of development towards the final product is moved from one element to the next along the chain. Whereas in the tourism value chain, it is the tourist who is moving from one element to the next, and it doesn't need necessarily to be a sequence of elements like it is strictly sequenced usually in a product value chain. So we have the tourism who is moving and who is consuming in the same moment as he is as the service is produced, and this is a major difference, and it is also more difficult to capture and to explain the different elements along a tourism value chain and to sequence them in a logical way. So you mentioned a couple of findings before, and also some surprises. So what is striking here also is the role of the state in the tourism sector, and I find it very interesting. And
45% of the hotel rooms are state owned, and that's partly because of a process of equitization and policy of equitization, where the difference is partly compared with other places, is partly that the state is so actively involved. And it's not just in the accommodation sector. For instance, we have state run tour operators, state run taxis, and many different parts of the value chain are the private sector is actually competing against state-run service providers. But it's not only the extent of the state ownership that's unusual, it's also, I think, the process by which it's being privatized or commercialized. And here we can see a very marked contrast, I think, with a lot of the experience particularly in the former Soviet Union, where the commercialization process happened very quickly and really to the benefit of a very small elite. Here I can see a very much more considered and thoughtful process of commercialization, which is quite deliberately getting workers in many hotels, for instance, to buy equity in their own hotel. So in addition to commercializing the asset, you're also creating share ownership amongst a broad section of the population, which I think is contrasting with many countries in the world.
What you mentioned before in terms of assets. So Da Nang has certainly, in terms of international tourism, one major asset, which is the Cham Museum. So the Cham Museum is showing pieces of art and culture of the Cham culture, which was living in central Vietnam for a certain period, some centuries ago. And we have a couple of other sites around Da Nang that are partly World Heritage, which are remains of the Cham culture. It is very interesting for international tourists. The museum is also exhibiting these different pieces in a very nice way, in a very old building, which was still built by the French here. So it's a major attraction in Da Nang. But the second potential attraction, which is the beach, and the beach along Son Tra, which is a peninsula, but also south of this peninsula, down to Hoi An, is beautiful. And it was selected one of the most luxurious beaches in the world in Forbes magazine some years ago. There's still a little bit discussion about that. Why was Da Nang selected? Because there are some criteria used for this selection, which we were wondering, how does Da Nang fulfill these criteria or meet this criteria? But anyway, Da Nang is using that as a slogan, one of the most luxurious or six most luxurious beaches in the world. And why not? I mean, the beach is beautiful, no doubt about that. But the beach or the area around the beach and the beach facilities are very poorly developed. And the beach is also not entirely clean. So how do you assess the situation and the current situation, and also what role should the Cham Museum and the beach play for the future strategic development of Da Nang tourism?
I think this is really where a local economic development methodology which always reminds us that a destination that forgets to exploit its competitive advantage is going to fall behind, is so useful, both in terms of man-made and natural assets bring tourists in. Taking the man-made assets, the Cham Museum, it is indeed a remarkable story, and it's a nice museum. But the situation is that this very nice attraction is visited by very large numbers of tourists, and particularly the high-end international tourists, about 100,000 visits a year. But all that does in the tourist development sense is to develop traffic into Da Nang to visit the museum, and then out of Da Nang an hour later. The city has really failed to capitalize on that asset, to hold people within the city, to increase tourist expenditure in the city. We surveyed tourists at the Cham Museum, and typically they were spending about $13 US dollars in Da Nang City. And this compares with almost $100 a day, which is a typical international tourist expenditure in Da Nang when tourists stay for a whole day and an evening. So simply having the museum here and a fascinating history is actually having very little impact on the economic development of the city. So we in the museum and cultural evenings, and we've worked with tour operators, with restaurants in the area, and with the management of the museum itself, and started to move those towards implementation. In terms of the natural assets, the beach, again, Da Nang has very conspicuously failed to exploit this beautiful beach that we're sitting on now, other than a couple of very nice restaurants. About 5 years ago, a tourist development area was designated along this beach, and it's one of the most attractive development assets on this part of the coastline in the Lonely Planet. It's described as one of the most potentially valuable bits of tourism real estate in the country. The problem is that absolutely nothing has happened on the ground over the last 5 years or so. What's happened in terms of the investment activity is that large numbers of foreign investors have come in promising development, have signed up commitments and received permission to develop, and there the process has stopped. And I think that this is a fairly normal situation where investors come into an emerging context, and essentially they're land speculators, where they get a development permission and then sit on land hoping that they can then onsell it for a higher price. And so the main natural asset of Da Nang City was being locked up and not utilized. The result of that was that the city was failing to do anything other than maintain its low level of international, and it was also losing its high-end domestic visitors because it couldn't build the luxurious accommodation on the beach that those sectors of the market need. What's happened more recently is very encouraging, and it's actually between the two missions that we had. In November of 2006, after our first mission, we wrote a report suggesting that the state should be rather more assertive with the investors and apply the existing rules, which state that investors will lose their entitlement to develop the land in the tourism development area if they don't start developing it. And we're not really sure what the causal factor was, but in the intervening 4 or 5 months, there's now some really quite frenetic activity along the beachfront in Da Nang. And there are about half a dozen really quite large, quite luxurious, and a mix between international and domestic resorts being developed, with a total of about 1,000 rooms, which are scheduled for completion in the next 18 months. So I think this is a really good example of where the state has an enormously important role to play in tourist development, even where it's exclusively private sector activity, the investment itself, the subtle change in the approach of the state has had a dramatic impact on the development of this extremely important natural asset that the city has.
Right. Thanks for this very comprehensive overview. What I'm finally interested in are still two points. I mean, we could talk for hours, and we already did talk for hours, of course, during our analysis, the first mission and also the second mission. But first of all, what are you suggesting as a tourism development strategy for Da Nang? And secondly, how do you see tourism in Vietnam, not specifically in Da Nang, but in Vietnam in general, developing, let's say, over the next 5 to 10 years?
In terms of this strategy, we've adopted a two-stage approach, a list of 25 proposals which had been suggested by local stakeholders, and we have been fast-tracking the implementation of those together with the support from the MCG team, the local consultant working on the program. So I think we've stuck with that philosophy that whilst looking at the longer term strategy, we also try and get some quick wins to harness the energy and change. And I think that the difference in the tourism sector in April 2007 compared with November front is developing, and that's very valuable. In terms of the long-term strategy, we're developing on a 10-year horizon options for the city, and really just following through the implications of the empirical work we've done to give the city the chance to make informed decisions about whether they carry on as they are with a predominantly domestic tourism sector at relatively low end, which is very large numbers of Vietnamese tourists spending typically $25 to $30 a day, or whether that's balanced with accommodation that will attract the higher end Vietnamese market and the international market to increase the growth of the sector, but also to link more strongly with the local economy through the craft and the food supply chains, which are rather undeveloped at the moment in Da Nang. In terms of the tourism in Vietnam, it's been growing relatively modestly, actually, for Vietnamese standards, where everything changes very fast. Da Nang City, for instance, is growing at 15% a year, and development is very, very visible. Buildings are going up very quickly, economic activity is bustling, and unemployment at 5% I think is lower than many of the large economies in Europe, and quite a remarkable achievement for a low-income country. So 10% growth in international tourism in Vietnam is actually quite modest over the last 10 years or so. That's annual growth, of course. I think that the prognosis for Vietnamese tourism is pretty good. I think the positives are that there's a very high level of safety for a developing country destination, and there's a peaceful environment for tourists.
So we agree certainly that is a very interesting and exciting task to work in Vietnam. Jonathan, thank you very much. I think this was highly interesting, and I hope we can have another interaction and project in the future, maybe somewhere else in another country. Both of us working in a couple of countries, so I see a big chance to do so. So I wish you a nice week in Laos, where you will go to now, and successful progress with your work in ODI, and all the best.
Thanks very much, and it's been a great experience on my side also, and I think this bringing together of tourism analysis with local economic development methodologies has been enormously interesting, both in terms of the research methods, but also actually seeing the reality change as a result, if only in part, of the research has been fantastic. So I've had a great time, and thanks a lot.